Ladies and gentlemen,
are you ready for the big show?
Are you ready?
Are you ready
for the partner?
Go! This is the MLS Show. On the BTP Network.
Yes. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. This is Beyond the Pitches MLS Show. My name is Scott Nichols, and we are back. And so is Otis Earl. Otis Earl, how are you?
Scott, great to be back. A lot to cover. Our first show, we're actually going to have a slight twist on our usual show. Obviously, for our US listeners, our US men's national team fans, we know it was a big weekend playing against the rivals over in Mexico. So, yeah, we've got things to cover, both MLS and national team. So it should be a good show.
Yeah, looking forward to it too. Yeah, that was it was a great game in the Azteca. But we kick off the show this week, like we always kick off the show, with the best stories that are in MLS. It's very difficult to cover 22 individual teams. So right now, we're going to talk about Chicago. I know it sounds like we talk about them a lot, Otis, but they just keep on rolling. They are undefeated in 7 games. They are 1 point behind the, quote, best team in MLS in the Eastern Conference right now on 28 points. Are they the real deal? I know we keep asking this, but it's now the middle of June. So I think this is the right time to ask this.
Well, yeah, it started as a bit of a surprise package, wasn't it? Because at the beginning of the season, we never really had them tipped to be up there. Maybe we would have thought they'd be fighting for playoffs, and the Schweinsteiger thing was a good story, and the Dak right. signing, and there was, but like we said, we spoke at the beginning of the year, we spoke about how bad their seasons have been in the past, and the sort of inconsistencies that they've showed, and they haven't been able to do it on the bigger stage and be able to sort of mount any sort of serious playoff push. But now, Scott, we're 15 games in. You know, we're hitting, like you said, the June, the sort of crunch period when we know it starts to get hot in certain parts of the country. And yet with that heat comes tired legs and national team call-ups, and you're really relying on, you know, the depth of your squad. But the Chicago team, they seem, there's a flexibility to them and there's a durability to them. And we've seen them win games in a different style. And the Atlanta game was a great one on the weekend, because it was the first time I've seen them play at home, but almost playing like the away team. They offered Atlanta a lot of the possession, and sat back with Dax and Schweinsteiger, but then hit them on the break. And most of their chances came from, you know, balls over the top with Akam using his pace, with Nikolic in his movement. And yeah, it's great to see the Chicago team, like I said, because what we're not used to in the past, be able to do things, like that's a sign of a good team, you know, be able to win in different ways and be able to win ugly. And yeah, exciting times for them.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with winning ugly, right? And yeah. To be honest, I don't think that they're that ugly of a team to watch, realistically.
No, they're not.
I mean, there are some times where I look at Schweinsteiger and think, you know, he is just like 3 steps ahead of everybody, but he seems to be able to keep himself so in sync with the rest of the team, but still be 3 steps ahead. He's this weird hybrid. And of course, I think that his ability is accentuated because perhaps he's used to, I don't want to say playing at a higher level, because I don't want to be insulting.
But for me, Scott, it's what's impressed me most about Schweinsteiger. Like you said, obviously he has played at a higher level, and we all know what he's done in his career. But not everyone else found it that easy. It took Gerrard a while to get going.
It did.
It took Lampard with his injuries a while to get going. But Schweinsteiger seems to have taken to it, taken to the style of the league, and taken to his team a lot quicker than maybe than I had even expected myself, knowing, especially coming from the back of not playing much football with Manchester United. It had been almost 10 months since he was really, you know, getting a solid run of games together. Yet he's completely bought to the league and looks like he's been here for years.
He certainly... It was a great fit. It didn't seem like a great fit. I even joked around when I heard that they were signing him by sort of tweeting out, and they'll be sort of trading him immediately too, ? Because they did it with Drogba, they did it with the, not Jack McInerney, Jack Harrison pick in the Super Draft as well. So I just for some reason figured that Chicago was going to flunk this.
That's my point exactly, Scott, is that this seems to be like a new look Chicago. Like it's almost, yeah, it's been a bit of a breath of a fresh air, you know. It's not what we're used to seeing, and I know I don't want to jinx it now that we're 15 games in, but they look like they you know, they can really do some damage and mount a good playoff push, which is what we all want to see at Toyota Park, because it's a great franchise. It's been in the league for since the beginning, and you know they still haven't lost a game at home.
No.
And there's a lot of positives to take. 7 out of the 8 wins have been at home, undefeated in 7. But we were speaking, weren't we, earlier in the show about away form in MLS, and Chicago's away form, only 1-3-3, only one away from home, lost 3, drawn 3.
Right.
Do you think that's a problem for Chicago? Do you think that's just the way the league is?
I honestly don't think it's a problem anymore in MLS to be bad on the road.
Yeah.
Because this year, more than ever, we're seeing that home is where the heart is, all right? Uh-huh. Where it's home. If you can take those fixtures at home and take care of them, that actually will serve you well for going into the playoffs. Now, we know that in the playoffs, anything can happen. So it doesn't matter if the Dynamo don't win on the road all friggin' season. That doesn't mean they're not going to win on the road in the playoffs. Because it's a totally different mentality that goes into those games, I think. Because when you know that you've got, you know, 17 home, 17 away, you know, I know that you've told us before, Oscar Pereja, he doesn't want to lose any games at all. But even in the back of his mind, he'll be thinking, okay, I don't have to win every game on the road. I think.
Yeah, I'll take a draw here. But for me, okay, Scott, I agree with that in terms of like a standings and a point basis.
Right.
But when you look at it in terms of a mentality thing, say you're a Chicago player, say you're, I don't know, a young player, Matt Pulser, one of the younger players in the squad.
Right.
You've gone to Houston, you've gone to Orlando, you've gone to, you know, you sort of traveled west, you've gone to Seattle, you've played in those environments, those hostile atmospheres earlier in the season, and gone there and got the job done. I'm saying in terms of a player, in terms of mentality, when you go then again and play in the playoffs, you've already got that in the back of your mind saying, okay, we've done it and we've done it in the season. The playoffs is, okay, I don't understand what you're saying in terms of playoffs being a completely different animal, but you still, as a player in the back of your mind, you know there, as you have the faith in yourself as a player and yourself in the team that you've gone there and you've already got the job done in that atmosphere before.
Right. Right, no, I can see that as well. I can totally see that. So what you're saying is, you're saying as a player, as a young player, I'm thinking, right, you know, look, we went to the Dynamo and we won against the Dynamo in their house. We can do this in the regular season when it doesn't matter. You're saying that's the sort of mentality
I'm just saying
the last thing
you want as a player is going into a tie
thinking you're going to lose.
Okay, exactly. Say you're playing, you got your first game at home and you draw one each. And then you've got to go away from home to a place where, okay, you've only won 2 or 3 games away from home all season. Now you're thinking, okay, now we have to do something that we haven't done all year. As much as it is about points and racking up as many points as you can for the season, I think you've got to look at it in terms of a mentality basis. It's good practice to go to these places. It's good practice to go away to Portland and play with all those fans who are screaming at you and not wanting you to win. It's good to go there and be able to show that you can get a result. So when it comes to the crunch time in playoffs, it's almost like a weight off your shoulders. It's like you've been there, you've done it. And then you can look at it more of just another game as opposed to really putting this pressure on yourself that you really just don't need during the times of the playoffs.
So how important do we think then it is that they drastically improve their form? Because if you look
what they've done on the road this season.
They do have a win on the road that came against, and I'm just looking now, it was at DC United. Okay. So they've got, you know, a win there. They drew against Orlando, so they forced them to drop points in their own house. They drew with the LA Galaxy, who, to be fair, are woeful at home at the moment. Don't know why, but they are. And then the first game of the season was a draw at Columbus. Another tough place to go, but the statistics say that every away game is a hard game. So, but why do you think that is? Why do you think that is? And how important is it for the Fire, for you, to at least, you know, what's an acceptable amount of wins? If they're 1-3-3 now, That's seven. So they got 10 away games left. How many of those away games do you think they need to win to feel really, really good about their chances of MLS Cup?
I'd say that out of the 10, got to win more than three.
So you think four or five?
Four or five.
I mean, that would put them in a great position.
Yeah, that would put them in a great position. And not many of the teams are going to do that. I just think we get caught up in a lot of the MLS, obviously, with... We know it's a difficult league with the travel and the different obviously environments in terms of weather, and obviously if you're playing in Colorado with altitude. I'd like to see Houston with the humidity. I'd like to see a team do like almost like what Dallas does and sort of take it to other teams when they go and play away, and not sort of settle for that. quote-unquote, home is where the heart is, and take your form at home. Because I just think, like I said, it's good practice in the long run. And not only are you going to be, you're winning points statistically, you're winning points mentally for your players and for your group. And knowing you can win away from home, obviously in a league where not many teams are able to do it, is just going to give you a slight edge. And almost looking at it from the other angle, you're a team that goes to other places and gets points and forces them to drop points. Now you're suddenly playing a team who's at home and they're slightly more nervous against you. You know what I mean? Because they know what you can. Then they know you're not just going to sit back and play as the away side. They know you're going to try and get at them. And sometimes that can be more difficult. Like you can almost flip the switch, and now the home team is not feeling as comfortable at home because they know they've got a team that's really trying to rattle them and rile them and get after them.
Yeah, and look, I mean, and I think to be honest. Chicago's opponents the other day, Atlanta, what they do, what still impresses me, and I'm still impressed by Atlanta. But Atlanta, they will take it to you on the road.
Yeah.
They will do that. They will go for the win no matter where they're going. And whether that's going to work out well for them or not in the long run is something that we're yet to see. I mean, they're below the red line right now, but they could sneak into the playoffs. They're a game in hand on the Red Bulls. They could be a point ahead of them and the Revolution. So, you know, but Atlanta's one of the teams that has one of the better away records in MLS. They have 9 points on the road. They've got 2 wins, 4 losses, but 3 ties as well. So they're a team that maybe Chicago can emulate going forward. And, you know, look, Chicago played that really great game against them in that they just let them come at them and then found those passing lanes. But DC United did it as well. Ben Olsen, I've said it 1,000 times, he says that if you can soak up the pressure and find a lane, you can get in behind and you can beat them. And I think that's something that we're seeing that's really great from Veljko Paunovic, right? Is that he has adapted that team from that Frank Yallop team that only had really one way of playing, and that was badly and losing, or at least it seems, right? Because now you started to see him turn it around at the end of the season last season, and now you've got this team where he seems to be able to adjust to all of the different situations that happen within a game. But I'm wondering, and I don't know what you think about this, but I'm wondering if a big part of him being able to do that is having players like Dax McCarty, is having players like Bastian Schweinsteiger, is having these players like
Let's not forget Nikolic too.
Yeah, Nikolic, Solignac, Akam.
Prize package of the season, hasn't he? 12 goals this season. He's got great movement, which I think when you've got, like, we always speak about Chicago's midfield, talk about Dax and Schweinsteiger, but what gives them, not only helps them in terms of their platform, is having that striker like Nikolic, who's always on the move, always on the hunt, dragging defenders, dragging fullbacks out of position. So that, you know, it gives the playmakers more space. It gives Akam more space. And I was watching the game against Atlanta on the weekend, and he had a run about 13 minutes in where he just sort of peeled. It was like what you see top level strikers do. He sort of peeled off the left fullback, as Vincent, the left back, was going down the long, and Vincent clipped a lovely ball over the top, and you saw Nikolic sort of let it come across his body, and he half volleyed it. It just went wide, but it was that kind of movement that you don't always see in the MLS. A lot of it is always like to feet, or very, a lot of strikers we see be very static and
right.
No, Nikolic is impressed me great, and I think they're going to need to keep him fit and firing if they're going to stand any chance of MLS Cup, like we spoke of.
Well, what I see when I look at Nikolić and I look at the stats is a guy who not only leads MLS right now in goals, but he has actually done it. 12 goals on just 28 shots on goal. 50 shots.
He's efficient.
Right, he is. I mean, look, to put it in comparison, David Villa has 3 shots on goal less and has 8 goals, but with 10 extra shots. So, Villa this season on 8 goals sort of is a bit mind-boggling to me that he's only at 8 goals and you've got Nikolić at 12, because that was all we were talking about at the beginning of the season, right, with Schweinsteiger. Yeah. And we weren't really... And we've talked about maybe that took some of the pressure off of Nikolić a little bit to do his own thing. But the thing that impresses me about him is his composure in front of goal. I think that's a really, really underrated quality in a striker in MLS, because you see it time and time again. How many times have you seen, Otis, when you see a guy go through on goal and it's one-on-one with the goalkeeper and they put it right at the goalkeeper? And we all talk about the great save, and I'm thinking, no, not a great save. He's literally shot it straight at the goalkeeper. So Nikolić, he reminds me, and I've said it again, but he reminds me of Nemeth, who was at Sporting Kansas City, he was an equally sort of classy player in that he would finish the
Hungarian
ball really
as well.
Well.
So, compatriot. Yeah.
So, yeah, Nikolić is, for all intents and purposes, becoming a star in Major League Soccer in his own right, but a guy who is already a star in his own right in world football is Zlatan Ibrahimović. Lots and lots of talk about whether he is going to come to the Galaxy or not. This has been a bit of a saga, actually, with Zlatan. I feel like the rumours have been going on for a long time now. Thought they might cool off a little bit because of the knee injury, because of the ACL, but I think that there was actually something on social media that you pointed out to me, Otis, that he's doing volleys in his backyard. Is this man for real?
It's Ibrahimović, mate. He's, like he calls himself, he's a lion amongst men. And yeah, from Nikolić to Ibrahimović, how would he do in MLS, Scott? Is he something the Galaxy need? I mean, is he something any team need? How would he fit in? How well he's going to fit in with their system? 28 goals he had for United over the course of last season. 28 goals in 46 appearances. Age 35, doesn't really seem to be slowing down. Although this ACL injury may take its toll. Let me bring those questions to you, Scott. How do you think Ibrahimović would fit in the Galaxy if, of course, this is all still speculation, if this is somewhere where he would go?
Well, I think that it replaces Robbie Keane, right? That veteran presence in the locker room. We know what kind of effect he can have on a team, how he can galvanize a team. Mourinho made him out to be a bit of a troublemaker, but the more I learn about Mourinho, the less I have reason to believe anything that he says anymore. It's true. So, look, I think that Ibrahimović fits in probably best in LA because he's still got a bit of an ego, right? And I think LA, he wants to be in LA. Like, you're not going to see Zlatan Ibrahimović go to the Columbus Crew, you know? No. I mean, he's not going to do that. So, it's a good fit in terms of location. It's a good fit in the sense that the Galaxy, they have this Galactico kind of signing style, if you like. And they need a striker. Now, I know he's injured at the moment, but like we were saying, I don't know if Zlatan's from another planet or something and that he's just going to recover really quickly. But, you know, if he's already kicking balls around on a surgically repaired ACL, maybe the sort of the rumours that from his agent where they were like, oh, they want us to, like, come back and, you know, have scientific studies on his knee because they can't believe how well it's healing already. Look, maybe that's true. Maybe this guy is just a specimen. Maybe this guy is, I don't know, but I think that he'll still take MLS by storm because I think that I thought he was going to struggle in the Premier League, didn't, you know. So why wouldn't he play well in MLS? Why wouldn't he? You know, but does this block Jaisi Zardes from doing well? Or do you think they've given up on Jaisi Zardes if they're going to sign a guy like Zlatan who has an ACL injury?
That's a great point, Scott, and I was going to bring that up myself. If you're if you're Zardes, are you okay with taking another sort of backseat role, so to speak, being another sort of secondary option? Because we were only talking a couple of weeks ago, weren't we, about, okay, now's his chance. Now there's no Keane. Now there's no Donovan. You sort of learn under their guidance for a couple of years. Now let's see. Now let's see how you do as the main choice, as number nine, with a Giovanni underneath you. And I like the idea of, you know, Zardes with his athleticism and his pace, getting in behind, making good runs, and then Giovanni sort of underneath as a classic number 10. I was excited to see that. And so you'd imagine, right, if Ibrahimovic were to come, he'd obviously play in his favoured number 9 position, and that would see what Zardes. They might either go for a 4-4-2 with him and with Zardes and Ibrahimovic, or that's going to force Zardes either out of the team or out wide.
Right. I just wonder if Zardes' best position at this point of his career is out wide. I don't know, but I don't think he has the technical ability to be out wide. What do you think about that?
I know Jesse. I've seen him play. I've seen him play in college. I've seen him play when he was a lot younger. I still think he's a striker. I think he's naturally a central forward. I think he can do a great. I think he's I think he has what it takes. He's a smart player. He's tactically sound. So I think he can do a decent job on the left and the right. But he's not a winger.
No,
he's not a winger. He's not going
to. Just real quick. I don't mean to interrupt. But look, here's what I want to ask you, just very quickly. Do you not think that even though Jesse Zardes is somewhat of a mainstay, you know, he's 25 now, going to be 26 in September of this year. Do you not still think that he can learn from Zlatan?
Of course, you can always learn from those top players. But, okay, let me throw that back to you. At what point does it become, okay, I still want to learn from the best? And at what point is it like, listen, at the end of the day, he's an US national team player. He's a big time footballer in this league. At what point did you say, okay, now I want to be the man? You give me the chance to prove that you don't need to go and splash out $8 million a year on Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Give me the chance, and I can reward you. Has he got that ego? Has he got that about him? That sort of nasty streak, or not an arrogant? It's like a confidence, selfish streak, which you need. All great strikers like Zlatan Ibrahimovic have themselves. So I think it's going to be fascinating to watch, to see if that, obviously, of course, like we said, it's all speculation, if that Ibrahimovic deal does go through, what that means for the rest of the team, and obviously especially Zardes.
I'm intrigued because I know that Jovan Kierowski is currently in Europe. That is not a secret. That was reported by the Corner of the Galaxy podcast, our good friends over there, who, to be honest, to throw a different sort of shade of green on this thing, I don't know if that's a phrase, but it is now. but they were saying that they spoke to a source at the Galaxy that said, we are not interested in him right now, that they need a striker right now. So they are in Europe right now. Kierowski is
looking
in Europe right
else.
Now, looking for a player. However, all of the stuff that I've been hearing coming out of the Galaxy in, I must say, an extremely unofficial context, you know, is Zlatan deal is basically done. There's like, he's going to come, he's going to do that, he's going to be here, he wants to come to LA. And that kind of jived with him at the end of the season in England, saying, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm going to re-sign with Man United yet. And then he gets the injury. Yeah. So I really thought that when he got the injury, he was going to sign again with Man United. But then, you know, you hear people, a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, he has a friend whose kid is in the Man United youth team, who laces Zlatan's boots or cleans his boots or does whatever. He's his little trainee or was. And apparently he was saying to the kid, you can come visit me in America next year, you know. So, and this is back in sort of April. So is it done? We have no idea, and like nothing, like I'm sure you'll agree with Otis. It's like we say, silly season in the Premier League. Nothing's confirmed until you see that player holding up your team's shirt with their name on the back or wearing it. You know, so we won't know if this is going to be a whole thing until Zlatan is wearing an LA Galaxy shirt. Can I see it? Absolutely. And I think it makes them. And I think that it would be a very smart move, even if he can't play until the home stretch, you know, maybe middle of July, sort of end of July, beginning of August, to be fully fit, to start playing 90 minutes a game. He's that kind of ego, that kind of
mentality. Come in and win the playoffs.
Yeah, well, not just that, but I think that he boosts the locker room's mentality.
Yeah, yeah, and, the whole feel around the club, will be different. The fans are going to want to see a big name like that, you know.
They'll be excited again. They'll get the excitement back around the Galaxy. He will get the excitement back around the Galaxy. Yeah. And I think he takes some of the pressure off of Anafa.
Yeah, no, you're right. But, okay, what about the team, I guess, across the way, I guess you could now say? LAFC, who aren't quite in the league yet. Next year, we're still waiting for them. They're another team who have been linked with Ibrahimovic in the past. Let's say he does go to Galaxy. What do you think that means for LAFC? Is that added pressure on them to get a big star?
I absolutely think it is, because you look at LAFC, they must be looking at Atlanta right now thinking, this is how we want to build a team. I think all expansion teams are going to be like, hey, we need to be like Atlanta. We need to build like Atlanta.
Yeah, but this is LAFC. This is going to be a different animal, mate. This is Hollywood.
See, I'll cut you off too early. Alike. That's okay. That's fine. No, you cut me off, man. I like it when you cut me off there. But it's, you know, look, you're right. LA, it's Hollywood. So who do they go and get? You know, one guy who I think they could go and get, and again, this is all speculation, but I like it. So Chicharito. I think if they go and get, the reason that Chicharito didn't sign with, I think it was Orlando, is that he wanted $10 million a year, and they went, nope, we're not ready to make, MLS said no, we're not ready to make you the highest paid player in the league, which I think was a mistake. I think they should have done. I think that Chicharito would absolutely deserve to be the
He'd score goals, mate. He'd score
and
goals
he would galvanize
here.
Fans. I mean, he is like perfect marketing tool for MLS. Yeah. He is the perfect guy. So, but what I was going to ask you is, on the scale of designated player deals, all right, where does Zlatan ranking come in? Because for me, this is the biggest thing that's ever happened to MLS. Maybe since Beckham.
Henry, you know. Beckham, yeah.
So who's bigger? All right, so you've got three massive names there, and I'll throw in Drogba. So you've got Drogba, Henry, Zlatan, and David Beckham. Which is the biggest deal?
In terms of playing or in terms of
what's
marketing?
The biggest? Well, just what's it's the got biggest?
The Beckham. I think the Beckham one is... The Beckham one was what started it all, really. He started the trend, wasn't it? So I think the Beckham one, we'll just leave that one aside. Drogba, it was a short stint, although showed what he could do whilst he was here. Henry was another one who definitely took to it. Didn't win a championship with the Red Bulls, but was definitely...
Important.
He was definitely important. It was definitely a big... Yeah, I think he'd be right up there with that. I mean, I think... Obviously, we've seen Villa, Pirlo, Lampard. We've seen other big names. I think a lot of the guys we've seen come over have been maybe, I don't want to say this with any sort of disrespect, maybe not at the level that Ibrahimovic is still at. I still think watching Ibrahimovic play for Man United this year, that he's not far from what we've almost, I should say, come to expect from him in the past sort of 10 years of his career. He's still right up there. I still think he could decide games at the highest level.
I think I think that with Ibrahimovic, it's his movement, right? It's the ability to get that ball out of his feet and go, you know, straight away. You see that so many times with Ibrahimovic, and he leads that line so well. And that's something that nobody can do in MLS, I don't think. Not even Nikolic, maybe. So, you know, not even Villa. Maybe Villa. So, yeah, I mean, look, but the thing is that the Gold Cup's coming up too. All right, the Gold Cup's coming up. Giovanni Dos Santos, they're going to lose him. He's a huge part of their offense. Jayasi Zardes, somehow, is in the 40-man roster for this. It doesn't mean he's going to make the final squad for it, but he's on the 40-man roster.
Somehow. He's a well-established professional, is he not now?
No, I think you're right, but I don't understand how Christian Ramirez doesn't get on this list over Jayasi Zardes. But then again,
his first year in the MLS, you know.
No, I know, but I still think he hasn't
quite been there yet.
No, okay. I think I understand where you're coming from, but I still think he has to go. But the thing is as well, Giasi Zardes has been taken by Bruce Arena as a midfielder. So that's whether that's in name only or not.
His like maybe sometimes it doesn't work in your favour, sometimes it does, but his flexibility in terms of positioning is obviously something in terms of a roster spot is gonna maybe balance, give him the edge over someone like Christian Ramirez.
Right. Right, but basically, they're going to lose him. They're going to lose Giovanni. So they're going to lose them to the Gold Cup teams, and the Gold Cup runs from sort of, you know, July, well, all of July, let's say they're without him all of July. So now you have a situation where you need to go out and get a striker. Zlatan might be injured if they do sign him. So then what happens? Because you have to play Jack McBean, Jack McInerney. I don't think I can name another striker on their team. So what is it better if they to go out and get someone who isn't Zlatan, who can play immediately? Or do you still have to just sign Zlatan and see if you can plug along with those two young guys?
That's a great question. I mean, it's really up to obviously the coaching staff and Galaxy's technical staff to think whether they think they can, you know, get by with those with the youngsters and maybe give them a chance and hold out and hope for the Ibrahimovic deal to go through. It's a case of what they can, you know, get done in the time that they have, really.
Right. Well, look, we'll use that as a transition. Into the Gold Cup, into US men's national team. They just played in Mexico because it's an international break. So we'll talk about the international show because some MLS players played. But there's one guy who obviously we're going to talk about, and that's Christian Pulisic. You know, how good is this kid? This kid, I mean, before the Bradley goal the other day, had scored or assisted the last, I think it was 8 US men's national team goals. What does this say about about the US men's national team, that an 18-year-old is their most important player, most valuable player, most creative player? You know, what does it say? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What does it really say?
I like it, Scott. I think it's a good thing. I think the US national team, it's almost like the English national team, isn't really. It needed something just a bit refreshing, some youth, some
something special,
sort of energy, exuberance. Yeah, something like a new kid on the block, because we've had the sort of, whether you want to call it the Donovan era, sort of the Donovan Bradley. I lost my mind. Bring this one back. Sorry, go again. We've had the sort of Donovan, DeMarcus Beasley, Freddie Adu era, if you want to call it that. So I think as a youngster, just being, if you're a kid watching American soccer, you want the new guy to look up to. Do you know what I mean? And I don't think the US have had that for some years, especially with Donovan and Dempsey getting on, so to speak, no disrespect, but you know, they're the other side of 30. Pulisic is a player though, mate, isn't he? He's the first American that's really gone to Europe, and he's still only 18 years old, and he really looks to, like, you know, be at home in not just European football, but we're talking top end European football. Dortmund, one of the biggest best teams in the
Bundesliga,
in the continent, and play, you know, yeah, in Bundesliga, you're playing Champions League football, week in, week out. He's playing with, you know, players like Royce, Aubameyang, top world class players, and then you see him come and play with the US national team, and he looks like he kind of likes the pressure of being the new kid on the block and being the sort of American hope, so to speak. I like him a lot, mate. I think he's got a bright future. Obviously, we know he's still young, but he can do things that we haven't really seen from an American player in my lifetime. Like, can drop a shoulder, go past someone, pick a pass, combine, everything that kind of like gets you off your seat, you know?
No, yeah, he is a very exciting player. He's one of those guys who, I get excited every time he's on the field. I want him to have the ball at his feet, and I'm sure All the US men's national team fans do. And look, they're under 20s, just had a great under 20 World Cup as well. And I know, you know, some people may not have watched a whole lot of it, but they've got some great players coming through, a really great group. They got knocked out in the quarterfinals to Venezuela, who were beaten by England in the World Cup final, just so you know, guys. We won that. First time since 1966 that we've won anything. So we'll be holding on to that for a fair while. Why don't we get in the Confederations Cup? Come on, we want a World Cup. That's what I'm saying. But anyway, but look, so this U20 team, you know, I think you're going to see them start to progress through. You've already got guys like Kellen Acosta who are transitioning to the national team now, right? You know, Pulisic too.
Well, that's another thing that surely is good for American soccer now, right? That was the team that Bruce Arena fielded against Mexico. There was a lot of youngsters in there. Ariola has come from the under-20s. Kellen Acosta, like we said, has come from the under-20s. Pulisic is an even 20. It's good to see, right? It's good to see for American soccer. It's good to see for the kids. It gives them a sense of hope, you know, that you can work your way up and it's possible to break through.
Yeah, but I also think it sort of underpins just how important, just how much focus, I should say, the US Soccer Federation has put on youth development. They really have said, okay, we need to develop. This is what we're going to do. And you're seeing the dividends paid out in full now with a guy like Pulisic. And I don't think that you necessarily have to go over to Germany to do it anymore. It's not that, you know, we have to ship all of the American players over to Germany. I think that we have a real, real vested interest in America now in developing these guys the right way. Yeah. You know, there was only three of the roster at the U20 World Cup that were playing their football outside of America, one of which was Gedeon Zalalem, who at one point was the next best thing, and we don't even talk about him anymore. So, look, I think it's a bright time to be alive for a US men's national team player and a fan. But the flip side of it for me is look at the guys who are surrounding people like Pulisic, Acosta. You know, you've got players like Alejandro Bedoya. I've never understood. Yeah. Never understood Alejandro Bedoya. You've got guys like Jassy Zardes. You know, I just think that maybe these guys are not at the same level as some of the guys who are about to come through. Some of them are ready.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's gonna obviously take time to integrate them. You can't put in a starting 11 of under 20s. But it's a good thing, you know, having that many players coming through like that. I definitely think the future is bright, and they played well over there. Obviously, Michael Bradley scored a great goal early on.
And
then it was a bit, it was a great finish, wasn't it? And then, I thought the Vela shot, maybe someone could have got there and blocked it a bit earlier. He kind of always looked like he was going to cut in on his left foot. But they defended well. They played, obviously, playing with the back five. They defended well and tried to do what they could on the break. Bobby Wood up front was isolated quite a lot. But, in terms of a youthful, fresh new look for the U.S. national team, it's definitely something to be excited about. And that's what I like how Bruce Arena's, you know, he's come in and he's given these kids chances. I think a lot of people thought, oh, Bruce Arena, old school coach, he's probably, you know, got his firm favorites already. But by no means has he come in and played the old guard. He's given guys who are not, let's not just say getting the chance because they're young, because these guys deserve their chance too. You know, Kellen Acosta has been great all season, great the past two or three seasons for Dallas.
Yeah.
And definitely deserves his chance. And it's going to be definitely watch this space for the US men's national team.
It's funny because he surprised a lot of people going 5-3-2. And if you look at the comments on Twitter, they were all like, if we get smashed, then this is all Bruce's fault, and they were all of the fans were sort of getting behind it. But, you know, look, I'm torn on Bruce because I don't think, frankly, that Klinsmann was that bad of a coach. Quite honestly, I quite liked Klinsmann as a coach. I think that he was just doing the best of what he had, he could with what he had. So, but Bruce Arena, you know, what he has shown is that he will not just stick to one system. He will say, I'm playing Mexico at the Azteca, and it's a big game. We need a big result. A tie is a big result. I think they've only taken points there two other times in their history. I think I heard Hercules Gomez saying on ESPN. So, look, this was a big deal, and it surprised me that he didn't go with Jozy Altidore up front, bit more of a big presence. I know he came off the bench and didn't really have that much time.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing in terms of just away from home, being able to hold it up.
Yeah, but look, that's another thing that we can say that goes in Bruce Arena's favour, right, is that he's willing to start a technical forward like Bobby Wood up front against this team, because he knows that he still needs that technical ability up front to score a goal. And when you're playing five at the back, I think Jozy is a pretty easy guy to say, okay, we need to have you out of the lineup today, you know. And I think that Jozy will do that for the team as well. I think that Jozy, if nothing else, is a team player. He is a good leader, a good guy in the locker room. You know, I think that he is sort of the right kind of guy that you want around the national team, whether he's a prolific goal scorer or not. I think that's still important to remember, is that you need those guys around, and that's why some guys get in, the guys like Graham Zusi, who's actually transitioned to a right-back role with Sporting Kansas City in recent weeks. I know he's moved back into midfield now, but he did play quite well, or he even played for the national team there, I think, too. So, you know, guys like Tim Ream had a great game. Guys like Jeff Cameron are great defenders. You've got a really good sort of, I want to call it the golden generation, in a way, or the golden generation times two, because, you know, because it's true, right? Because you have these guys like Jeff Cameron, he's still got a few years left in him. You've got Jozy Altidore, who might become the leading scorer, you know, in US men's national team history at some stage. He's only 24, 25, 26 years old, you know. You've got Pulisic, you've got Kellen Acosta, you've got some guys coming through in the under-20s that are going to be there very soon. I think it's a good time for US soccer right now. And look, they're in a precarious position in the hex right now, because after, I think, Panama and Costa Rica both play on Wednesday, I want to say, on the 14th. So they play Wednesday. They could be sitting fourth after those games happen, if the results don't go their way. So that position has to do a transcontinental qualifier if they finish there. They have some tough games. They've got some run-ins. You know, I think they have to play in Costa Rica, the US men's national team, yet. Or certainly have to play them. So that's a big deal. Look, they just need to continue working hard. If they work as hard as they did in the Azteca in every game, then they should be fine. But you never know with this stuff. But look, the international break is over. And we do have some games this weekend. Some big games, big games. New England Revolution at home against the Chicago Fire. Time for the Chicago Fire maybe to prove that they can win away, Otis?
Yeah. Not an easy place to go. Anyone who watches MLS knows.
Haven't lost there all season, Revolution.
Haven't lost there all season. There's going to be a lot of great games coming up. It's going to be the next couple of weeks are really important getting through this month of June. Orlando-Montreal, another game that I'm excited to see.
Yeah.
Galaxy hosting Houston, another one. So the next couple of weeks, there's obviously a lot for us to talk about. The next couple of shows should be good, and we should have a good guest, right, for the next, Rivalry Week?
Rivalry Week.
It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? Rivalry Week in 2 weeks' time.
Okay, yes. So, Otis has done us a real solid by going out, and he's spoken to the one, the only, Kyle Martino to come on, and he's agreed to come on the show. We're going to preview Rivalry Week with him. And look, you know, so make sure that you watch out for that. Okay, guys, Kyle Martino, be on the Pitch MLS show. Make sure you tune in the week before Rivalry Week, because we'll be trying to break down as much as we can. Some other little things that are going on as well. So we don't want to give too much away, but we do want to give away that Kyle Martino is going to be on our show. Right, and look, that's our show today. So, Otis, where can people find you on Twitter, bud?
OJL3 is my Twitter handle.
There you go, your Twitter handle.
Is my tweet. You'll sound like an old man. I really haven't caught up with the times, have I, when it comes to Twitter?
No, but you'll get there eventually. It's all right. You can live vicariously through BTP and myself. Look, you can follow Beyond the Pitch on Twitter, @BeyondThePitch. You can follow me, @ScottNichols. @ScottNichols. And look, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Thanks very much for listening, guys. Goodbye.
Check us out online at beyondthepitch.net. Follow us on Twitter at Beyond the Pitch. Or find us on Facebook at Beyond the Pitch Show.